What does that child want to do? Is it natural to mommy? Now, if you were just being ornery like Dave is sometimes and just hang on, no, you won't let him go. You hold him back. Will that baby cry and scream? You know, no, let me go. You know, because it's natural to run to mommy. This knowledge of God is so natural. It's inherent in all of us. It takes a conscious choice to hold it back, to suppress it down, to beat it down so it doesn't take its natural course in your life and bear fruit in that you become a person that honors God. And I'm going to demonstrate that, or Paul is, throughout the rest of this chapter here. But that's the whole premise. People consciously choose to suppress God. Now, when you say that, this is not a matter of intellect. When we talk about intellect, we're talking about reasoning, right? Based on evidence and coming to conclusions and using logic. This is a product of volition. What does that mean? Your will, that's right. It's something you choose. Yep. Now, the way it should be, if we're being genuine, authentic people, our intellect should drive our will. Now, what do I mean by that? If you realize smoking will kill you and you are convinced of that, should that drive your choices? Yeah. Well, certainly. You should, well, I'm not going to smoke. Now, if someone chooses to anyway, there's a dissonance. How do you spell dissonance? Dissonance. What does dissonance mean?
Disconnect.
Disconnect, discord in music. When we had a singing last night, you know, learning new songs, there was a lot of dissonance in the room. Well, because we were learning new songs and you're trying to get your parts and you know what that note is, but you don't know the pitch and it's, you know. You know what dissonance sounds like, right? Well, there's mental dissonance when you're out of harmony with what you know to be true. There's emotional dissonance when your conscience is telling you, I shouldn't be doing this. There's spiritual dissonance as well. And when you neglect what you know to be true, it creates dissonance. Now, the problem we're going to see here is the intellect is not driving the will is driving the intellect. So what are you talking about? When you willfully choose to take a path and you know it's not right and you know it just conflicts with just so many things on so many different levels, you'll do one or two things, well, maybe three. One, you'll go crazy. Some people do. It causes all sorts of anxiety and mental illness, seriously. Or else you'll change because you just can't do it anymore. Or three, what? Well, yeah, you can harden your heart, but you'll start to rationalize your behavior and say, and rethink and come up with a new paradigm to view this behavior to justify it. And therefore, the dissonance fades away. But if it was truth that brought about this conduct, and you denied the truth with an alternate conduct, and now you've rationalized the new perspective to, you know, justify your behavior, is your intellect in harmony with truth?
No.
What are you going to have to come up with? Some type of foolish thinking. Now, that's exactly what Paul's going to say. Brian.
Yeah.
That's right. And it epitomizes how you and I struggle in our spiritual walk because we do exactly the same thing. We can. All right. Yes.
That's the very reason Pilate raised the question, what is truth, when he was speaking with Jesus just before the crucifixion?
Exactly.
Pilate knew it was wrong.
That's right. And I want to piggyback that because if you're suppressing the truth, that means the truth has to be knowable, doesn't it? You have to know it to be able to suppress it. And so There's this irreverence in the holding down. So now let's look at the words in the text. And verse 19. I love this. It's so beautiful, but it shows the working of God in each and every one of our lives, without exception. Because that which is known about God is evident within them. And get this. God made it evident to them. Who did? God revealed himself to who's the them? Each and every person that ever walked on this earth. And that's why you've heard me say, I'm done trying to convince people there's a God. God does a better job of that than I do. He's already made it evident. He's given them the evidence. They already know. You don't need a preacher. You don't need an evidence book. You don't need to go to college. All you need to do is look and listen to God. It's already happened. And it's intuitively, everyone knows about it, but they either embrace it and let it lead them cognitively to a good choices, or they suppress that knowledge because they don't want to be accountable for whatever reason. Peer pressure, culture, just self-willed. I don't know what it is. But for some reason, they choose to suppress that obvious knowledge. You say, well, are you sure about that? Verse 20. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, here specifically is what we all know about God. We call this general revelation. General is because you really don't know anything about what God wants you to do. You really don't know anything about heaven or hell. You know some general things about him. And what are they? His eternal power and his divine nature. And these have been clearly seen. That means obvious, clearly. It's just like brought to light and understood. And now, who's he speaking about? Every individual that walks on this earth. They clearly see it. They understand it. And it's been made that known through what has been the creation. That's right, what is made. So everyone's without what? So you say, well, I don't know. I really doubt there's a God. Well, initially, the evidence was crying to you there was a God, and we probably all knew it. Yeah, not probably, we did. And here's some of the words. I want to break them down. Evident means to bring to light. God's the one that has done it. And this is the visibility, of course, that brings accountability. He says there's no excuses. And then he says it's his eternal power. Now, why would you get, looking at creation, evidence of God's eternal power? It's like there has to be a God with eternal, awesome power. Because when you rationally think through it and you look at all the design of what he's made, and look at the alternatives, you have to come to a conclusion. You have to. Everyone does. There has to be a God. There has to be. Pascal said, God has created a heart-shaped vacuum in each of us. That's the interesting saying. And what's the only thing that can fill that vacuum? It's God himself, because we are created in his image, and we intuitively know there's something there. Yes. General revelation, yes. Thank you. That's exactly right. Because when you are, if you nurture this awareness, you seek him so you might find him. You look for him. And the saddest thing is a lot of people don't know where to go, and that's our job, is sharing the gospel, because it is the power to salvation. And that's what Paul says. Seek him. All right? Yes.
In the book, still,
yes. Yes?
He said that he'd sooner believe an alien that created life on this planet than God, but what was pointed out in the movie was that was actually attributing an intelligent design.
I don't know if you heard what she said, and for the sake of the recording, you did, maybe the movie too, what's it called? Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. It's interesting, Richard Dawkins is one of the biggest proponent for atheism, and he's so anti-Christianity. And he was being interviewed, and the question was, you know, we got the problem, where did life come from originally? Because you believe in this evolutionary process, but pretty much all scientists realize now that life could not have spontaneously originated on the earth, not in some primordial soup. And so you know what the theory is now that they're leaning to? It was somehow spawned on this earth by a meteoroid with some type of life form, another world, or aliens. Seriously, I'm serious. And he said that that's what he believes. Now, what is an alien? If it can bring a ship in here and bring life on this earth from which we came from, it must be some kind of a superior intellect, first of all. And where did it come from? You're just pushing the problem to another planet or galaxy. You've not answered anything. Is that not true? He believes in intelligent design, yet he mocks it when we claim it. Now, we're going to have some thoughts on that here in a second. Yes? That's what I'm saying. Their intellect is driven by their will. They choose
to create their own truth, which overrides the truth.
Exactly. Now you're getting, that's exactly it. Because they choose to suppress, so they have to come up with another paradigm to explain everything. Why we're here, the purpose of life. Because I choose to not go there spiritually. Boy, I could give you quote after quote. They say that. We cannot let a spiritual foot in the door. An evolutionist saying this. Cannot allow that to enter our thinking. And it's an agenda. Here it says, clearly seen and understood what has been made. So there's no excuses. Here, it's interesting. Matthew, Jesus said, our Father causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And you say, well, Why you bring that up? Well, because Paul says in Acts 14, he did not leave himself out without a witness. In that he did good and gave you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness. He's making the case that God's witness for who that he is just nature in itself. Now, you look at this eye. I could read you the quote from Darwin. I think I have it. Let me do read it, okay? I knew you wanted to hear it, right? I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, you pictured it up there, and I won't expound, but just all the mathematical precision that is in what's around, that is constantly, even today, still being discovered. And
right.
How you can to suppress that takes an enormous amount of will.
That's right. Yeah. I can't see it right now, so I'm not going to. But he says, if you can't come up with an explanation for the how the eye evolved, my whole theory goes to kaput, you know? Because it sets it, he says, the whole concept of evolution seems ridiculous when you look at the miraculous, now he didn't use the word miraculous, but how amazingly involved an eye is. And evolution can't come up with a model how it could evolve. They can't do that. It's interesting, this is where Brad could come into play here, but we're not going to let him have the floor because it'll be a lecture for the next 40 minutes on the Fibonacci sequence, right? Now, what is Fibonacci sequence?
A series of numbers that produces what is called the golden ratio.
The golden ratio.
And these numbers are found throughout nature.
It's basically, it's 1 plus 2 is 3, so 1, 2, 3. 2 plus, you take the last two numbers, you get a new sum, so 2 plus 3 is... 5. 5 plus 3 is 8. 8 plus 3 is 13. Yeah. And he said, well, that's a weird sequence, but it's found in so many places of creation. And you go, how did that perfect order find itself? And it's not just a pattern. It's an ordered pattern. It's very, very profound.
And as you go out, it creates what's called the golden ratio, which mm-hmm. is
That's right. It's the essence of beauty, if you didn't hear that. Yes?
I stayed on the cover. It's pretty dark. I've been in a lot. I've heard a lot of it. It's dark. And
That's right, your eye, that's right. Here's Richard Lewontin. He's a Harvard geneticist, and here's his comment. We take the side of science in spite of the patent absurdity of some of its constructs, in spite of its failure to fulfill many of its extravagant promises of health and life, in spite of the tolerance of the scientific community for unsubstantiated just-so stories, because we have a prior commitment, a commitment to materialism. That is, explain everything in a physical, you know, realm without a God. It's not that the methods and institutions of science somehow compel us to accept a material explanation of the phenomenal world. But on the contrary, we're forced by our a priori adherence to material causes to create an apparatus of investigation and a set of concepts that produce material explanations. No matter how counterintuitive, no matter how mystifying to the uninitiated, if that's you and me. Moreover, the materialism is absolute, for we cannot allow a defined foot in the door. Now, does he admit what we're saying here? There's an agenda. We cannot even go there. So even though this, some of this seems stupid and foolish, which it is, that's the only thing we have left. So with that being said, notice what happens next. Even though that's the premise. Here's the slide. God makes himself known to everyone. And if we just be still, if we'll just go back and just look in the stars, just spend some time alone and just be still and listen and think and just take this world in and ask those important questions. How did I get here? What am I here for? Is there life or death? You're going to reconnect with what you already know to be true, even though we've suppressed it. But anyway, they know there's a God. Here's the first step in this slide. It's volition. They did not honor him as God or give thanks. Those are the first two things. You see that? And the second thing is they become futile in their speculations. We'll go there in a second. The word honor is to glorify, or it means to give preference to and to be thankful. These two are tied together, and let me explain it. We give honor to so many things in life that we hold in high esteem, or we regard as somehow higher than us, that and therefore we're accountable to them. We've talked before about a stop sign. Does everyone here pretty much honor a stop sign? Yeah, how do we honor it? And yet we just kind of joke, it's just a sign. But yet we kind of bow down before it, right? Do we honor gravity? How do you honor gravity? Huh?
By not jumping out of a plane,
unless you have something strapped to your back, right?
I don't have a choice.
You have a choice to honor gravity or not. It's honor it or else what?
Die.
Is there a choice in that? Yeah, but we honor it, don't we? And it's an abstract thing, isn't it? It has no entity or emotions or personality. It's just a force. Do we honor government? Do we honor the police? Do you honor your school teacher? Do you honor your boss? Do you honor your wife? Some do and some don't. Do you honor your husband? Some do and some don't. When you do, things are well. When you don't, it falls apart. But we honor health. We honor diets. We honor money. We honor so many institutions in the world. But when it comes to the supreme being that is all-powerful, all-knowing, and created all, they chose, no, I'm not going to defer my life to you at all. See what he's saying here. So, and then furthermore, I'm not going to be thankful. Thankfulness, or the lack of gratitude for anything, shows probably the height of arrogance. Because when you refuse to be grateful, what are you saying when you receive a blessing? I deserve it. And I don't need to thank you, because if you understood how good I am or wonderful I am or important I am, you would have felt honored just to give me that gift. He said, well, that's what not being thankful really says to some degree or another. God, I don't need you. I'm not grateful for anything you've done. In fact, I'm so ungrateful, I don't even believe you brought the rains that watered my crops. I'm going to come up with an alternative solution. It was just a coincidental thing of patterns of nature, and it has nothing to do with you, and I'm just lucky to have my seed in the ground when it rained. Now, that's the vain speculations that are going to come up here. Futile in there. Now, I don't like the word speculation, so we'll have to look at it here. It really is the word thinking, and it's the idea that the word futile, first of all, is aimless and pointless, and the speculation is bottom-line conclusions. Because people that suppress the knowledge of God have to come with an alternate explanation to give them a sense of reality in this world. You understand what I'm saying? Like, how did I get here? What's my purpose? Where am I going? What's right and wrong? Now, it's easy for us to establish all the answers to all those questions because God, not through his general revelation, but through his inspired revelation, his word, he gives us answers to all those things. And we honor that. But when you don't have this, where God spreads back the curtain between the physical and the spiritual and speaks to us, what are you going to do to answer all those big questions? Why am I here? How did I get here? What's the meaning of life? What's right and wrong? What are you going to do? Huh? You got to come up with your own answers. Huh? Well, yeah, you default to yourself. You're going to have to come up with an alternative. And that's what the world's so quick to offer us. And you say, well, what's always the big thing about evolution? Because if you believe in evolution and the Big Bang, and every ethicist and philosopher who's honest, and that they'll actually say this, that believes in evolution and materialism, they'll come to this conclusion. They say, if we're just here because a series of random events that happened by chance, there is no purpose for you being here in this world. Richard Dawkins says that. Get over it. There's no reason for you to be here. Life is meaningless, and when you die, you're just dead. That is the answer. So that's why evolution is so important, that we speak it for what it really is. And a lot of people aren't willing to go there, so they try to come up with something else. Well, morality and meaning comes from other places, and they're desperate to find it. Sometimes it's in temporary fame, or it's in money, or it's in adrenaline rushes, as we've talked about, sex or drugs or power. They'll do anything to fill that hole in their life, right? They're desperate to. And so it's will-driven intellect. They have to come up with an alternative paradigm to explain everything. And Paul says, it's stupid thinking. Because it's irrational. It can't be justified. It's not cogent. You can't defend it. But that doesn't matter when you slide down this path. Have you ever met someone that believed in something totally ridiculous, but they believed it so much you could not argue with them? It didn't matter what you said, they could not be convinced. So yeah, in politics, well, it could be that. Did you realize there's a flat earth society still in this world? Yep. What's a flat earth society? It's growing every year by not millions, but hundreds and hundreds of people who today believe still the earth is flat. There's a brother in a congregation in this area that believes that. Not in this congregation, this area, all right? Well, there might be one here, I don't know. All right. And you talk to the person, and it doesn't matter what you say, they got to answer for everything. And that's why he says their heart becomes darkened. It moves from their head to their heart. Now, here's the picture. They believe the world is like a frisbee. And it's a round sphere, flat. They don't know what's on the bottom, but they think rocks. What's holding it up? Well, I guess it's those turtles and elephants still. I don't know. But if you look at their map, they think the North Pole's in the center of this sphere. The continents are spread around in a circle. That's why when you fly, you can go. And on the edge is Antarctic. It's an ice wall, hundreds of feet high, to keep the oceans in. And there are some special forces, NASA or someone else, that are keeping people from climbing over the wall and going over the edge. Don't laugh. They believe this. I'm sorry. He said, what's the proof from that? What about moonshots? They were all photoshopped. Well, what about people, man on the moon? They actually didn't go there. Everything you bring up, they have an answer to, and it doesn't matter how long you argue with them and present evidence, because they're will-driven, their intellect is so darkened, or their foolish speculations, you can't reason with them. And they say, well, have you ever considered this? If the world was round, like it was, you know, a globe, and you set your altitude and your direction in a plane to fly straight, right? And you keep flying over the Earth. What happens pretty soon the farther you get around the Earth? You're going to outer space. And he says that never happens because it proves the Earth's flat. Because the words, if the Earth was flat, you could just do that. They don't change their altitude. They just keep just. So how do you answer that? Okay. Then I say, well, okay, how come they can fly around the world and in a straight line and start where they began? Because that shows it's a globe. You know what their answer to that is? Because they have rigged every GPS and guidance system in planes. And actually, you're going to the right each time, and you're spinning in a circle. That's where you end up in the back, and it's on a flat Earth. If you go in the other way, it takes you to the left. Okay, that's quite a conspiracy. But honestly, they believe it. Now, would you call that darkened or vain, worthless thinking? Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And the answer was, it's turtles all the way.
That's right. A couple more. Here's a Harvard professor at biology. One only has to contemplate the magnitude of the task to see that spontaneous generation of a living organism is possible. But here he goes, but that doesn't give us a problem, because here's his next quote. Time is the fact, the hero of this plot. The time which we have to deal is the order of 2 billion years. What we regard as impossible on the basis of human experience is meaningless here. In other words, it doesn't matter if you think it's impossible. Because given enough time, so much time, the impossible becomes possible. The possible then becomes probable, and the probable becomes virtually certain. Don't you get that? You fool. And one only has to wait. Time itself performs the miracles, turns that which is impossible to possible. That's his answer to this dilemma. Now, does that make sense to you and just grab you, or does that seem like a bunch of gobbledygook? No, I'm serious. I'm not trying to just make fun, because that's their answer to how life got her on this earth, because given enough time, anything can happen. They believe in miracles, don't they? And by his own admission. It is a faith system. But when you suppress the knowledge of God, you have to come up with something else. That's what Paul's arguing. I won't even go in. Oh, I will talk about this one. This one. This I just read last week. This is a professor of law at Rutgers. He's a distinguished professor. And I'm going to say this as respectfully as I can, because these people believe this and they're lobbying for it. And it has to do with keeping pets, domesticated animals, any domesticated animal. If we all embrace the personhood of non-humans, we would still need to think about the rights of non-domesticated animals who live among us and in undeveloped areas. He's calling your dog or cat a, wants to give them personhood. They're non-humans. They're animal persons, though. They're dog persons and cat persons. Non-humans have a moral right not to be used exclusively as human resources, because that's what your pet is. It's a human resource for your enjoyment, irrespective of whether treatment is humane. And if humans would enjoy desirable consequences if they treated non-humans exclusively as replaceable resources. So basically saying is, you ought to get rid of all your pets because you're abusing them and you're owning them as a piece of property, and property is just chattel, it has no rights. Now, where does that come from? No God, right? We got here by evolution. You're just a higher evolved animal than that dog. But you have no special rights over that dog just because you have higher intellect. And if you're going to give yourself rights, you have to give every non-person or non-human person rights too. Animals, deer, whatever. And it's consistent if you accept the premise, what? There is no God. It is consistent. But the foundation is flawed. Well, right. Well, there, because you got to be a vegetarian then too. But plants are personhood too. People are. I know we laugh, but we have to be very careful because we can follow this same path of darkened thinking when we suppress the truth in our life. All right. So he goes on, professing to be wise, they become fools. He just says it. And then here's the next step. They exchange the glory of God for incorruptible God, for in the image and the form of corruptible man and the birds of four-footed wing animals and crawling creatures. The man is made to worship something. There's this vacuum. And we're now going to have to prop something else up as that which we will worship. But so we now worship creation. That's why God wants us to be welfare, good stewards of the environment, of animals, of everything that he's given us. But when you start elevating that which he has made to the same level of us, it's worship. It's worship of the environment. It's worship of trees. It's worship of animals. And when you start giving them rights, they become idols. Now, there's so many functional idols that we have in our life that people substitute for God. It could be money. It could be power. It's that which gives you your identity and purpose in life. And whatever that is, I don't know. You fill in the blank. If your identity is tied to your job, that is your functional idol. And if your job was taken away, you would cease to exist as a person here. In other words, you'd have no meaning, no purpose. That job is your idol. It gives you your identity, correct? And if your identity is not rooted in something else, independent of a job, then what a shallow person we have become. But that's what happens in the world. They're looking for something to base their identity on. And so the process goes. He says, exchange the glory of the incorruptible God for a corruptible man, birds, animals, and crawling creatures. Notice, oh, I didn't know those birds were flapping. Notice it goes from beautiful things in the sky like eagles to beast to crawly things. See the slide? All right? And that's not just by chance that he's using that. So, since man does this, this is what God does. And we'll finish next week. But he's going to give them over. This is an act of judgment. And we're going to explain why people do what they do. Okay? But now hopefully you can see where they got where they are to start with. All right, thank you.